You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm Lee Keller, joined by John Kuh. We return after the All-Star break, where we watch the All-Star game, the celebrity softball match, the home run derby, and there it goes, back, and Mike Trout has a rare back disease. Not what we planned. Today's show is our first since the All-Star break, so we'll talk about those festivities, the injury notes and roster moves, the performances from the past week, and later on we'll be joined by pitcherless writer Jake Crumpler to talk about relievers. But before we get into all of that, John, how are you doing? What did you think about the All-Star break?
All-Star break was fun. I was pleasantly surprised to see Juan Soto winning the home run derby, even though it was cool to have J-Rod in there. Let's just hope this means Juan Soto actually has a good second half of the season.
Oh, yeah.
I did think Fox, like, they did a great job with miking up players. I thought that was golden. Loved John Smoltz telling Alex Manoah what to throw. And
yep.
Of course, he ends up hitting the guy.
Yeah.
So it's unfortunate there. But I thought, I mean, like, the conversation between Nestor Cortez and Jose Trevino during that one inning was awesome. Obviously, it's going to be hard to have that in-game, but for stuff like the All-Star game, I think it's amazing. It's definitely something that I enjoyed watching.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when he said, hey, what should I throw Smoltz? And he goes, throw a backdoor slider, or back foot slider, he said.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, that's sexy.
Great. That's great.
It was great. It was so good. Alec Manoah has such a good personality, and it's really good to see these mic'd up moments. And even in the actual games where, like, Eugenio Suarez hit a walk-off home run while mic'd up, there's some really cool moments when we add those mics in. I think it adds a cool dynamic. Yep. I don't think we should do it very often, but it's nice to see those one-off games, and especially in the All-Star game or any of those exhibition matches, 100%, it's awesome to see that, because it is so interesting hearing a pitcher on the mound speaking while they pitch, because it really is cool to see them pick each other's brain and see what the thought process is, and I don't know, I really like that. That aspect was really cool.
Yeah, and I think baseball is kind of just the one sport where you can have that in-game action, and there's that interaction between, you know, the player and the guy who's interviewing them, and it's still, you know, you get to kind of understand, like, the game behind the game, and I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, because baseball is a little bit of a slower sport. You know, in the outfield, you're standing around between plays, and you can interact with someone through voice, so it makes sense why it works in baseball, and it's crazy that we haven't done it more often. I just find that a little bit hard to believe. We're a little bit behind in the times, but we're catching up. And for me, for the home run derby, I was kind of pissed. Well, first of all, obviously I'm rooting for Pete Alonso because I want to see a three-peat, and he's my boy. But I bet on three people for the home run derby. I bet on Julio Rodriguez to win. He had really good odds, so I said I'll throw $5 on him. Kyle Schwarber and Pete Alonso. And Juan Soto won.
Rough.
So I thought I was a lock for Julio after he took down Pete and he had 30 homers back to back. I thought it was a lock, but hey, man, Juan Soto just showed up when Julio Rodriguez didn't. So that was disappointing. But hey, it was an awesome weekend. It was a good break for us. I'm very happy that the All-Star break was a good time. But besides that, how was your week? Do you have anything exciting coming up this weekend?
Honestly, I'm just waiting for the Twins to add pitching. That's all I'm waiting for.
Just sitting around all day on the couch waiting for, like, the Twins to get pitching.
Like, this week I got to see Chris Archer and Dylan Bundy both just not do anything spectacular. And it's, like, you know, so obvious that we need to add starting pitching. And then it's so obvious that we need to add relief pitching. And deadline's in, like, less than a week, and there's nothing happening. I'm just basically waiting for any like Luis Castillo rumors, any Frankie Montas rumors, just things like that, just to, you know, happen so that I don't have to worry about missing it, you know?
Yeah, before the podcast started, I thought Luis Castillo is either going to the Yankees or the Twins, and I think Montas is going to the Dodgers. We'll see. I hope that you at least get one pitcher, because the Twins certainly need it.
In my opinion, I'd rather have Montas than Castillo, because Castillo is just notoriously, Castillo's notoriously bad in cold weather, and it's like, yeah, the most logical decision for him to go to is Minnesota, of all places. Like, he already can't pitch in Cincinnati when it's in April. Like, he's not going to be able to pitch in Minnesota when it's May.
No, definitely not. I agree completely. I'd rather have Montas in general. Even if Castillo was good in the cold weather, I would rather have Montas. Yeah.
I'd rather have Tyler Molly than Luis Castillo, and that's saying a lot.
Yeah, that's like,
Castillo's really, really good.
Yeah.
Really, really good, but I just don't know how he's going to – is he going to pitch well in, like, late September in Minnesota? Is it going to be too cold for him? We'll see.
Yeah, that's a hot take, man. I don't know if I'd rather Molly over him, but, hey, that's a good point. He does stink in the cold, and Minnesota's pretty cold.
Yeah.
As for me, since the last time we had this podcast, I believe I went to the Met game where Keith Hernandez's number got retired.
Oh, yeah.
And that was really fun. That was a really good day. We got Keith Hernandez bobbleheads. My dad and I went. We had great seats. We got to see the whole unveiling and the pregame ceremony. The Mets won. My record's 5-0 this year when I go to Mets games, so I can't ask for a better result than that. So very excited about that. And then this upcoming weekend, I'm actually going to the National Sports Card Convention in Atlantic City. So that's going to be really fun. If anybody is going to the National Sports Card Convention, I'll be going on Saturday from 10 to 6. If you see a guy in a Syndergaard jersey that's very pale in skin and about 5'10", come up and say hi. I will gladly talk to you about fantasy baseball, the podcast, or cards, because that's what I love.
Nice.
Yeah. So, with that being said, before we get into the injury notes and roster moves, I'd like to remind all of you that you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL, and you can send us your questions, comments, and concerns to our email at ThisWeekPLpod@gmail.com. If you want us to talk about a certain player, review a trade that you made, or anything else fantasy-related, be sure to write us an email or send us a tweet. Lastly, make sure that you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform that you listen to your podcasts on. We're on all of them, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. So make sure you do all of that and leave a 5-star review if you're enjoying the show. It helps us out greatly. But now we move on to the injury notes and roster moves. There were probably tons of moves for the past week and a half since we didn't cover an entire week. But I'm only going to talk about the big ones because if I had to go and search for every little thing, it would have taken us days to go through. So I'm only going to mention the very important ones, so hopefully you all understand that. But as we said in the beginning of the show, Mike Trout of the Angels was placed on the 10-day IL on Monday, July 18th with a rib injury. Then on Wednesday, it was revealed that Mike Trout was diagnosed with a rare back condition called costovertebral dysfunction. Not sure what that is. It's rare. So, hey, it's like a holographic Charizard Pokemon card. I mean, I don't know what that is. The doctor said that not only does he have to manage it through the rest of this season, but also through the rest of his career, probably. Trout, however, says that this concern about his back diagnosis has been overblown and that he will play again this year. Obviously, this is a concern because Trout has missed a lot of time over the last few years with injuries. And if this is serious, it could really throw a wrench in his career. But he says it's not that big of a deal, but he also said that about his calf last season, and he was out for the entire season, so I don't really know what to say about Trout. Do you have any opinions on it?
So, obviously, I'm not a doctor, but I have friends in the medical community.
Okay.
So, costovertebral dysfunction basically just means that where your ribs connect with your spine, there's just, like, an issue there.
Right.
Dysfunction doesn't really... It can mean a lot of things. It could be irritation. That's what he was on, you know, the IL for, was rib irritation.
Right, yeah.
Could be a little bit painful, things like that. I talked with some people who, like, actually do work with, you know, spine and stuff like that. And they said, you know, it's not rare necessarily, but it could be something that you have to deal with. Probably for HIPAA issues, obviously we don't know all the information for Trout. We don't know how serious it is.
Right.
I'm probably more leaning on the side that it's not that serious. It's going to suck, obviously, for Trout that he has to deal with this nagging injury. But I don't think it's going to, you know, make his 30s. He's not going to be a bad baseball player, essentially, for the next 10 years.
I don't think it's possible for Mike Trout to be a bad baseball player. I just hope that he's on the field long enough to pad that resume for his Hall of Fame career. I mean, he's already a Hall of Famer if he retired today.
MVPs.
Yeah, I mean,
what more does he need?
Yeah, if he retired today, he would easily be in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
But it's something about something about these players like Mike Trout and Ken Griffey Jr. You just want to see them healthy for their whole career because they are a generational type talent that literally could be classified as the greatest player of all time. But injuries just derail everything.
Yep. I mean, Buxton basically didn't play after the All-Star break for, five games. You're just like, oh boy, like, let's hope this isn't like him done for the season. It's kind of, I'm sure that's the same thing that Angels fans feels about Mike Trout with this news coming out.
Yeah, it sucks. You don't want to see Trout out for any amount of time, and this is certainly something I'm worried about, but I also think that it's not that serious for this season, at least. Maybe it hinders him in the future, but I think he comes back and plays this season. If you do roster Mike Trout, don't panic drop him based on this news, because he clearly said that he will be playing again this year. So hopefully that's true. Moving on, Rafael Devers of the Red Sox was placed on the 10-day IL with right hamstring inflammation on Saturday, July 23rd. He's expected to return when he's first eligible on Tuesday, August 2nd. Chris Sale of the Red Sox was placed on the 15-day IL with a fractured left pinky finger. It was actually pretty brutal. In just his second start back from the injured list, Sale recorded two outs and then got hit with a comebacker directly on his pinky finger. He showed it to the camera and it was like bent all out of place. It was horrible. Did you see it?
That was gross. That was gross. It was, and it's unfortunate that it has to happen to Sale, but
of course,
like, jeez, that's just the worst timing possible.
Oh, horrible timing. Just thank God it didn't happen in a AAA outing, because then he would have beat something up or destroyed a local pub. I mean, who knows what would have happened. But
wondering how the TVs at Fenway were feeling.
Yeah. Thankfully, you can only use one hand instead of two for it. But but hopefully Chris Sale feels better soon. I know he got surgery on it, so hopefully he comes back and pitches again this season. Luis Robert of the White Sox was placed on the 10-day IL, retroactive to July 19th, with lightheadedness and blurred vision. He began a rehab assignment with AAA Charlotte on Thursday, so hopefully he comes back soon. Jacob deGrom of the Mets will likely make his next start in the majors. It's looking like he'll return on Tuesday against the Nationals, and I cannot wait for Jacob deGrom to pitch again for the Mets. Giancarlo Stanton of the Yankees was placed on the 10-day IL with left Achilles tendonitis on Tuesday, July 26th. Our favorite injury note and roster moves attendee, Chris Bryant of the Rockies, has plantar fasciitis in his left foot. He's been DHing ever since and says that this is something that he can manage with shoe inserts, treatment, and icing, so hopefully he doesn't miss any time due to it. Fernando Tatis Jr. of the Padres has been doing on-field batting practice. He's on pace to return in mid to late August. Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado of the Cardinals both were unable to participate in the series in Toronto due to being unvaccinated. Max Meyer of the Marlins was placed on the 15-day IL with a right elbow sprain on Sunday, July 24th. And then on Thursday, it was announced that Meyer will undergo Tommy John surgery. Huge blow for the Marlins and fantasy managers that picked him up. He'll be out for the rest of the year and a majority, if not all, of 2023. Tough blow for one of the game's top prospects. John, anything to add on Meyer? Just brutal.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's unfortunate. He's a Minnesotan kid, actually. So.
Oh, really?
I watched a lot of him pitch in his freshman year at the U of M, because he was basically the Gophers star closer. So I followed his career, obviously going number three in the draft a couple years ago, and then being able to be in the majors this year. It's cool to see for a local kid, but yeah, it just sucks that he makes it to the majors and then it's just like, oh yeah, by the way, now you're out for the next year.
Yep.
Just brutal. And the Marlins, they've got pitching prospects out the wazoo.
They can easily
replace Meyer, but it just sucks for him, Meyer specifically, that he has to deal with this. And it'll be interesting to see what happens when he comes back from surgery. His calling card when he came out in the draft was his fastball. And we'll see if that velocity kind of stays there after Tommy John. It probably should, but yeah, it's just tough to see.
Moving on, Bobby Witt Jr. of the Royals has missed four straight games after being pulled from Sunday's game with right hamstring tightness. He hasn't gone on the IL, so hopefully he can avoid that. Salvador Perez of the Royals is on track to rejoin the club soon. He's working his way back from undergoing surgery to repair his torn UCL in his left thumb. Yordan Alvarez of the Astros was activated from the IL on Thursday, July 21st. Andrew Heaney of the Dodgers was activated from the 15-day IL on Wednesday, July 27th, and pitched four scoreless innings against the Nationals. And then a couple of trades. Andrew Benintendi of the Royals was traded to the Yankees for three minor league pitchers, and Tyler Naquin of the Reds and left-handed pitcher Philip Deal of the Reds were traded to the Mets for two minor leaguers. John, any last comments on this batch of players?
Interesting move for Benintendi. Obviously, it's just a move to replace Joey Gallo.
Yep.
And then Benintendi actually led off for the Yankees on Thursday. So clearly, he's their solution for, not having a guy you know, strike out sometimes in Gallo. And, you know, Naik went to the Mets is an interesting move. Obviously gives them another power bat, which is nice. We'll see if it works out. But I'm just waiting for the big shoes to drop here.
Yeah, we're waiting for those big pieces to fall. The Castillo, the Montas, the possible Soto. There's a lot of people that could be moved. Otani even, yeah. Which would be unbelievable to see Otani go anywhere. Yeah, that'd be nuts. And hey, Benintendi also said that he would get vaccinated if he got traded to the Yankees. So I guess they believe it, and I guess he's going to, because hey, if they're going to have to play in Toronto, they're going to need him to. And they're not going to want to trade for somebody that's going to be sitting on the bench when they need him to play. So that's a big move there. And also, I think it's so funny, since this Benintendi trade, I've seen so many funny memes based on Joey Gallo. One, obviously, when Edwin Diaz came in against the Yankees, because Joey Gallo was supposed to face Adam Ottavino, but then Diaz comes in, and literally Joey Gallo had no chance. Joey Gallo could have just sat in the dugout and had the same result. It was so funny. He was so overpowered, he could not do anything but strike out. He couldn't even make contact with the ball. It was hilarious. And then I saw a meme with Andrew Benintendi getting traded. There was, I guess it was Jets training camp. I don't know much about football, so excuse me, but it was Jets training camp, and a guy walks into the front doors of the facility, and he has to type in a code on the pad to get into the door. So he goes to type in his code, and he types it in, and he goes to the door, and it won't open. And he's like, I guess I forgot my code. And then he goes back, he types it in, he goes to open, he goes, I think they cut me. And it was, the tweet was, Joey Gallo upon the trade of Andrew Benintendi to the Yankees. It was really funny. If anyone could go and find that tweet, I definitely recommend seeing it. It's a good laugh. I guess they cut me. It was really funny. It was really, really funny.
That's Also, shout out to Pitcherless's own Schwebsey, who kind of joked about that Diaz-Gallo matchup of like the world's most unstoppable, I think it's like force. Force against the
most movable. Yeah.
Which was like, that's, oh, it's like, that's just unfortunate for Gallo.
Yeah, Shrubs is a good friend of mine, and that was a quality tweet. He just had no chance. He got so overpowered. He could not do anything against Diaz. It was funny.
Yeah. Shout out to your Mets, though, for taking down the Yankees. That was a fun game on Wednesday.
That series was awesome to watch. It was great that the Mets won both, obviously, for me. Yeah. But what a great two games of baseball. And if that's anything like what the playoffs will be, it's going to be really exciting.
Yeah, it was a fun game to watch. And it was hilarious to see Aaron Judge not be able to pick up Max Scherzer's slider.
Oh, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. He struck out three times. Oh, gorgeous.
Yeah. Well, we got to talk about a lot more players and a lot more games besides just the Mets and the Yankees. So.
Oh, yeah.
Just starting last Friday, you know, after the All-Star break, starting on July 22nd, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. of the Blue Jays went 6-for-7 with a double, 3 runs, and 5 RBIs. In case you forgot, the Blue Jays put up 28 runs on the Red Sox, confusing fans at Fenway who thought they bought tickets to a baseball game, not a football game. There was some really funny memes about how, you know, Tom Brady, obviously, you know, football lore, Super Bowl lore, came back from like a 29-3 deficit in the Super Bowl.
Yep.
And basically, you know, people were making fun of the Red Sox not being able to come back from 28-5 in a baseball game. obviously, different scoring systems, but, it's obviously good fun. But, yeah, Gurriel was a big part of the night, going nearly perfect at the plate, driving in 5 runs. I think the stats were, like, the last time some guy hit six hits in a game was, like, Anthony Rendon, like, 5 years ago.
Yep.
But, yeah, Gurriel spent the most of the year as a bench bat on your teams. He's, you know, he's been cycling in and out, probably on waivers, not on waivers. But he does have a high average in OBP. He does have something to add. Just doesn't have a lot to add in the counting stats department. Still, the Blue Jays are starting to heat up, and it might be time to invest in bats like Gurriel as the Blue Jays, you know, start hitting their stride and really push towards that wild card spot.
Yeah, the last people with 6 hits in a game were Rendon, like you said, and Devers. They both had 6 hits in a game, and that was wild. And can you believe the Red Sox? They've been so atrociously bad. Did you see the inside the park grand slam from Raimel Tapia? And that was the botched plays everywhere? Oh, my God.
The Rand's face on that play was one of the funniest things. Like, if you want to, like, if you want to give a award out for, like, lowest effort, like, on a play, like, Duran's a front runner for that.
Oh, definitely.
And then watching games on Wednesday, Franchi Cordero has no business playing first base.
Nope, not even close.
Like, oh my goodness, just... it was just painful to watch.
And then Sawamura ran past the bag trying to make an easy play where the first baseman has to throw it over to the pitcher, and he just ran past the bag and didn't touch it, and they were safe.
Ugh.
It was just a disaster all around for the Red Sox. I mean,
yeah.
Duran, I want to give a little bit of slack to, because maybe he thought it was out and it came back in. That was his only excuse.
Right.
But like,
yeah.
I still, if you're a rookie like he is, you got to run after that ball and make it somewhat of an effort. I mean, I know you're really far away from it, but like at least walk towards it fastly.
Right. Like the ball drops and he just like stares at it. For
he
like
just
five
like
seconds.
He's taking baby steps towards it. Like nothing's happening. Like the game's not going on. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. Like it's easy to lose a fly ball in the roof and things like that.
But still.
It's just, ugh. Yeah, it was not cool to see. Moving on to maybe some better news, Ramon Urias of the Orioles went 3-for-4 with a double, a home run, 2 runs, and 2 RBIs on Saturday. The Orioles have been one of the most surprising teams of the summer, as they now sit just a few games out of the wild card spot. Not bad for a team that had the first pick in this year's draft. Urias has been a big part of that swing momentum. He's hitting .372 with a 1.041 OPS in July, along with 14 RBIs and only 5 strikeouts. Definitely just, it's a good month for him. He's definitely one of the hotter pickups that if he's still available in your league, I would say go get him because he's not going to be there for long. Adolis Garcia of the Rangers went 4-for-4 with a home run, 3 runs, 3 RBIs, a walk, and a stolen base on Sunday. It's just fully showing off that power-speed combo again this season. He has 18 homers so far. He's got 15 bags. I don't know if he's going to get to 30-30. It might be possible. I don't think he's going to get there. But even if he goes 25-25, I think that's pretty great for Garcia. And he's probably going to avoid the pitfalls that doomed the second half of his season last year. Remember, he kind of just collapsed. He was really hot through the summer and then all of a sudden was doing nothing in August and September. He's brought down the strikeout rate a little bit. He's increased his line drive rate. Basically, he just has a better approach to the plate. And I think that's going to lead to better consistency, and it's just going to avoid that collapse that he had last year. And it should give you confidence to hold on to him for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I actually really liked Garcia coming into the season, and I have no shares of him anywhere. It's crazy because he was going so late, and I was like, I really like Garcia, man. He's got a 20-20 potential. He's going real late. Why don't people like this guy? Sure, he fell off at the second half of last year, but I was very shocked how late he was going, and I actually just didn't end up with him anywhere, and I really like him.
Yeah, I definitely got burned because, I rostered him last year in my home league, and it just wasn't pretty. So
yeah, he probably carried you through the first half.
Oh, he did. It was great.
Yeah.
It was just the second half. I was like, where are you?
Yep. Yeah. What happened to you?
Right. Exactly. Moving on to pitchers, we have Zach Gallen of the Diamondbacks with 7 innings with 0 runs, 2 hits, no walks, and 7 strikeouts against the Nationals on Friday. He was able to earn a lot of strikes. He got 13 whiffs, 16 called strikes for an overall CSW of 29.9%. It's not particularly flashy for Gallen, but starts like these are encouraging, even if it is against the lowly Nationals. He did follow this up with a 5-inning outing against the Giants. It wasn't that great, so he's not really in that ace form that we're all really expecting of him. But he keeps showing us these moments of brilliance, so it's hard not to want to chase it and see what happens. And then Lance Lynn of the White Sox went 6 innings with 0 runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts against the Guardians.
Yeah.
He's been pretty much borderline droppable, I think, even in 10 teamers, to be honest. He's been so bad. And he finally had a vintage performance against the Guardians. He had 6 strikeouts and a 45% CSW on his favorite pitch, the four-seamer. It's a little worrying that the velocity still isn't back. But, you know, if he's able to kind of do this well with that fastball, even with the lower velocity, it might not be a lost season. We'll see in his next few starts if it actually pans out. But I'm happy to see Lance Lynn finally get at least one good start under his belt.
Yep.
And then Tyler Mahle of the Reds went 6 innings with 3 runs, 2 hits, 3 walks, and 5 strikeouts against the Cardinals. If there's one player that many fantasy managers have been waiting for trade news on, it might be Tyler Mahle, who, depending on how the deadline goes, might have made his last start as a Cincinnati Red in Great American Ballpark. He is scheduled to pitch on Saturday against the Orioles, so maybe he gets his final start as a Red then. Still, for all the ink that's been spilled on how Molly's an ace on the road and barely startable at home, he managed to put a quality start at home against the Cardinals, and we really hope he gets moved to a park where it's a little bit more pitcher-friendly.
Oh, definitely. If he goes to anywhere that's a pitcher-friendly park, he's going to be someone that is very good for the second half, no doubt. And I'm super excited that Lance Lynn actually just had a good outing. I don't even expect like a whole season of this, but I just wanted one at least for the amount of draft stock that I put into him across several leagues. So great to see this. Hopefully he can keep it going. If not, oh well, but I hope to see more of this Lynn. But moving on to Monday, July 25th, from the Batter's Box article, 5,000 Candles in the Wind by Mark Stubinger. We're talking about Jonathan India of the Reds. He went 3-for-4 with a double, a homer, 2 runs, 4 RBI, and a walk. Last year's NL Rookie of the Year was someone that was highly desired in drafts this season. However, he's unfortunately missed a lot of this season due to injuries. His slash line of 240, 304, 383 is a little disappointing, but he's recently found his groove, homering in 3 of his last 7 games. If he continues to stay hot, he could be in for a big second half. He's someone that a lot of people like this season. I was kind of off of him, but hey, he can be really strong for you out of that second base position for the rest of the year. And then Josh Rojas of the Diamondbacks went 2-for-4 with an RBI, a walk, and 3 stolen bases. Well, that's a big game from Rojas. 3 steals in 1 game is a feat that not many players have done this season, if any even have. Maybe John Birdie did, I'm not really sure. But these 3 steals bring Rojas's total up to 11 for the season, which is a career high, believe it or not. His previous high was 9. So the 3 in this game put him over it. Also, he hasn't been caught stealing yet, so I doubt that he's going to stop running all of a sudden. With a slash line of 283, 357, and 422, as well as having second base, third base, shortstop, and outfield eligibility on Yahoo, he's certainly a player that you'll want to pick up. I think he's a pretty good asset leading off for the Diamondbacks.
I got a fun ad drop question for you.
Okay.
Jonathan India or Max Muncy in an OBP league?
Oh, God, that's so hard. I just think Muncy is done this year. Give me India. Okay. Give me India. It's so hard. Obviously, OBP is Muncy's format, and he's so good in that format, but he's just been so bad, and I'm done with him this season. I will revisit him next season, but this season, you can drop Max Muncy for pretty much anybody, and I'll agree with it. So give me India, who's surging. The Reds are looking a little bit better than they were this beginning of the year, so give me India over Muncy. Moving on to pitchers from Monday, we've got the SP Roundup article, Withdrawn Manaea, from Nick Pollock. We start with the title boy, Sean Manaea of the Padres. He went 3.1 innings pitched, 4 earned runs, 8 hits, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts against the Tigers. So not what you want to see against one of the worst offenses in the league. This has been my biggest swing and miss this season, which is the opposite of what Manaea is doing to batters right now. Coming into the season, I had Manaea as my SP25, my 25th best SP in the rankings, and he's certainly not pitching like that right now. He hasn't been good, allowing 3 earned runs or more in 5 of his last 7 starts. His sinker has been fine, albeit down a little bit in velocity from last year, which is one of the big reasons why he had success and made me excited about him for this season. However, his changeup has been awful, generating way less strikes. He's someone that I'm still hopeful can turn it around, but I'm starting to lose a little bit of faith here. I really wish Manaea would just be good again. And then Aaron Ashby of the Brewers went 7 innings pitched, 2 earned runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts against the Rockies. Wow, what a start from Ashby. Sure, it was against the Rocky Road matchup, but still, 17 whiffs and a 41% CSW. It shows you just how much upside Ashby has. He throws heat, his breaking stuff is nasty, he generates whiffs, has a great CSW. Ashby truly has the mold of a future ace pitcher. It all just needs to click with good command, and he is ready to roll. I'm most surprised about the Brewers letting him throw 111 pitches in this one, because if there's anything that I'm the most worried about with Ashby, it's his workload and how long his leash is. He literally pitched 1 inning in his last outing before this one, and 4.1 before that. So you never know how many innings Ashby's going to pitch on any given night. But this one was absolutely brilliant. And also, shout out to Nick Lodolo of the Reds, who went 6 innings pitched with no earned runs and 9 strikeouts against the Marlins. He had a 36% CSW, and while the Marlins have been horrible, that's still very impressive.
Yeah. Moving on to Tuesday, July 26th, starting with hitters with the Hunter 2 article from Jim Chatterton. Cedric Mullins of the Orioles went 1-for-3 with a home run, a run, an RBI, a walk, and a stolen base. He's following up his breakout year last year with an understandably less exciting year this year. It's kind of hard to follow that up. He's got less home runs, a lower slugging rate, a little bit decreased hard contact. He has stolen 21 bases, which is kind of impressive, including one on Tuesday. Looks to be on track to potentially go 15 homers, 30 steals. I would hesitate to call this season disappointing because, after all, it's hard to replicate a season where you had an 878 OPS.
Yep.
We'll take more performances like these from Mullins for the rest of the season, obviously. It's nice to see him get a home run and a stolen base in the same game. But he's been really good for the Orioles this year. I don't think they're complaining. I think he's been doing pretty well. So, maybe not like the top 15 outfielder that people were drafting him as. But he's still been good. And then Seiya Suzuki of the Cubs went 2-for-4 with a double, a home run, 2 runs, and RBIs. Remember Seiya Suzuki? It just feels like it was a moment ago when we thought the Japanese outfielder was going to take the major leagues by storm, hitting 4 homers in his first 9 games. Unfortunately, he's been sidelined for injury for a good chunk of the season, but since he's been back, he's hit 4 homers and slashed .348, .366, .537. Hopefully you held him through that IL stretch because it is paying off now. Those are honestly great numbers from Suzuki. That's in the month of July, so it's a decent sample size. We'll see how Suzuki is for, you know, the rest of the season and even, you know, next year and just see how his career pans out. But if he, it definitely looks like he understands major league pitching at least, and he's able to, you know, do well in the majors, which is cool to see. And then moving on to pitchers with Carlos Momentum from Nick Pollock. Pablo Lopez of the Marlins, he went 7 innings with 1 earned run, 2 hits, no walks, and 11 strikeouts against the Reds. If this was Lopez's final audition before getting traded, which is crazy to me, I don't know why there's any trade rumors about Pablo Lopez right now.
Agreed.
I don't even know why the Marlins would even think about it. But yeah, he was amazing. Lopez had a 41.5% CSW over all his pitches, getting 18 whiffs total. His curveball had an impressive 53.8 CSW with 13 thrown. Has Lopez struggled this year? Yeah, he's had a few bad starts here and there. He's blown up a couple times. But the man is a stud, and I think the Marlins would be insane to trade him. And I think rest of the major leagues would be crazy not to give Lopez a hard look and figure out what it would take to get him on their team. This man is easily a top SP2, if not an SP1, on any rotation. And it's incredible to me that there's even trade rumors.
Completely agree. Pablo Lopez is nasty. I mean, he is really good. Obviously, a little bit of shoulder concerns and innings pitch concerns, but how can you trade Pablo Lopez? He's phenomenal.
Right. I mean, you know, maybe the Marlins actually shore up their offense with a pitcher trade, but that's unlikely.
Yeah, I agree.
And then Carlos Rodon of the Giants went 6 innings with 5 earned runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, and 10 strikeouts against the Diamondbacks. I know what you're all thinking. Rodon's hurt. This is the beginning of the end. Why did the Giants sign him to a 2-year contract? After 2 straight starts giving up 5 runs, sure, even I'm a little worried. Granted, that first start was against the Dodgers. Giving up 5 runs against the Diamondbacks is a little weird. But he still went 99 pitches in this game. I don't think there's any injury there. And he gave up all his runs on just 2 homers. Only 5 men got on base, and they all scored. That's, like, incredibly lucky. In fact, I think Tyro Estrada probably got hurt more than, you know, Rodon got hurt in this game. If you didn't know that reference, it's Rodon kicked a bat in the dugout and it hit a strike.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah,
that's funny. I didn't see that.
Kind of unfortunate. Rodon got a little pissed off and a little friendly fire there.
Wow.
So a little bit of bad luck here. The fastball was still dominant with a 41% CSW. The secondaries were honestly pretty good as well. 5 men got on base and they all scored. That's kind of the main story here. I don't think Rodon is, you know, I don't think he's in territory that you need to start thinking about getting rid of him or try to trade him. I think he's still fine.
Yeah, that just sounds like bad luck to me. I mean, 5 people got on base and they all scored. That's pretty rough.
And he had 10 strikeouts.
Yeah,
like, he's clearly dealing.
Yep. Yeah, that's a rough one. But moving on to Wednesday, July 27th, from the Batter's Box article, Dahlbeck to the Future. Love that. Back to the Future reference. By Dave Swan. Starting us off, Rowdy Tellez of the Brewers. He went 2-for-4 with 2 home runs, 2 runs, 6 RBI, and a walk. Rowdy was off to a scorching hot start to the season and then significantly cooled down in the last month. However, he's just recently started to pick things back up, especially after a 2 home run and 6 RBI performance. These 2 homers bring his overall total to 20, and he also has 64 RBI to go with that. He's striking out less than 20% of the time this season and has decreased his O-swing percentage by 4%. Those are some positive changes for Rowdy that you just love to see, so good to see Rowdy having a great season. And then Ketel Marte of the Diamondbacks went 2-for-4 with a double, a home run, 2 runs, and an RBI. I've personally been disappointed by Marte's season so far. I was very high on him coming into this season, especially on Yahoo, where he has second base and outfield eligibility. This homer brings his total up to 10, which just isn't very good. If you think Ketel Marte's 10 isn't very good, Lourdes Gurriel Jr.'s 5 is just atrocious. But I pin Marte as a 25 homer, 10 stolen base sort of player. However, due to a couple hamstring problems, he hasn't run as much this year, and due to a slow start to the season, his home runs and RBI are low too. Marte still managed to provide you with a .270 average despite having a .146 average after March and April. He's still an elite hitter, and he should have a solid second half ahead of him, but It's definitely been a disappointing season for Marte. And then lastly, shout out to Matt Olson of the Braves, who hit his 20th homer of the season on Wednesday. That also brings his RBI total up to 66. He's on pace for a 35 home run, 100 RBI season. Olson's homered 8 times in July and 7 times since July 12th, which is just incredible. Oh, and also he leads the league in doubles with 35. The man is getting comfortable in Atlanta and is an absolutely elite first baseman for fantasy.
Yeah, funny thing about Roddy Tellez, that first homer he hit of the game was off Chris Archer, who Archer like walked the first two batters. And then I was reading the box score. You know, Rowdy comes up to bat. I'm like, oh yeah, this is gone. You know, like, I didn't even have to look. I'm like, I know he's going to hit a homer off Archer, and lo and behold, he hit a homer off Archer. So.
Of course, you hate to see that.
You hate to see it.
Well, you like to see it for Rowdy. You hate to see it as a Twins fan.
Yeah, exactly.
As for pitchers on Wednesday, we have the SP Roundup article, "The Cole Picture" by Nick Pollock. We start with Yu Darvish of the Padres, who went 7 innings pitched, 2 earned runs, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 11 strikeouts against the Tigers. Congratulations on your AGA label, Darvish. Well deserved. I've seen tons of fantasy analysts complain about Darvish, saying, where are the strikeouts? He's been underwhelming. He's not an ace. That's a bunch of hoopla. In his last 6 starts, he's had 11, 9, 9, 6, 10 and 9 strikeouts respectively. He's up to just under a strikeout per inning after a slower start in the strikeout department this season. Darvish also has 8 quality starts in his last 9 starts. He's been really good this season and finally has that ace is gonna ace label on pitcher list. So Darvish, welcome to the club. And then John Gray of the Rangers went 6.1 innings pitched, 4 earned runs, 5 hits, 4 walks, and 8 strikeouts against the Mariners. Although this line doesn't look pretty, trust me when I say this, Gray was a monster. In his final inning of work, he left a hanging slider over the middle of the plate to Julio Rodriguez, who tacked on 3 earned runs to Gray's final line. The walks were a little bit much, of course, but he was dealing. I don't want to talk too much about him because I feel like we've talked a lot about him recently, and you know I'm a Gray truther, but his fastball is sitting at 98 miles per hour now. And his slider is still disgusting. He's a guy that if you can buy low on him after this start, do so. If he's on your wire, pick him up right now. Stop listening to the podcast. Pick him up because you definitely want him. He's going to be huge in this second half.
Yeah, I was very excited for John Gray to leave Colorado, and it's clearly paying off.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Moving on to Thursday's performances, we got Jesus Aguilar of the Marlins. He went 3-for-4 with a home run, a run, and 4 RBIs. Every year, it just feels like we get glimpses of Aguilar's potential, and every year, we ultimately get disappointed.
Yep.
He hit a 2-run shot today, which is nice. Brought in 2 other batters as well for a decent day at the plate. Unfortunately, the season has not been as pretty. He's been slashing way below his career averages. I was actually surprised. I was looking on both his Savant player page and his Pitcherlist player page. Just a lot of blue.
Which
is surprising to me for a guy who, you know, supposedly hit the ball hard. You'd expect at least his hard contact is good, or even his, you know, hard hit percentage. It's all blue. It's not pretty.
Wow.
At 32 years old, it's hard to say if we're really even looking for potential anymore from Aguilar. The walk rate's down, the strikeout rate's up. He's not hitting the ball hard, as I mentioned. Just leave him on the wire. There's definitely better options available. And Trey Mancini of the Orioles went 2-for-4 with a run, 2 RBIs, and an in-the-park homer. Isn't baseball romantic? It might be Mancini's last game at Camden Yards as an Oriole, and he sealed the victory for Baltimore in an important division game against the Rays with a 2-run inside-the-park homer. It was just unfortunate for the guy in right. Like, it just bounced off his head. And, you know, when that happens, you just run. And you hope you get home. And the throw actually was pretty close to the plate.
Yep.
It was a pretty accurate throw from the outfielder. So it wasn't a guaranteed deal for Mancini in any way.
Yeah, poor Josh Lowe of the Rays in right field. He was trying to track it. Must have lost it in the sun or the lights or something, and it bounced right off his head.
Yeah. That's like one of those not top 10.
Oh, definitely. That would be number one on not top 10 if it was still going.
Yeah, exactly. Well, for Mancini, the power output, it's definitely not there this season. He is getting on base still, so he's helping in that way. And even though fantasy box scores can't measure intangibles, his veteran presence is certainly something that will make him an asset on whatever team he ends up for the rest of the season if the Orioles do end up trading him.
Both Mancini and Mullins are guys that you just have to root for with both of what they've overcome, and you love to see it.
Exactly. And it was a cool story with Mancini last year in the home run derby.
Oh yeah,
I think it, And it's, you know, it's cool to see that, you know, he's at least able to, you know, potentially play his last game as an Oriole with such a memorable memorable game.
Yeah, the fans showed him a lot of love, so big ups to Mancini.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then moving on to pitchers, Brady Singer of the Royals went 7 innings with 1 hit, 0 earned runs, and 1 walk, 10 strikeouts against the Yankees. Congratulations if you had that on your MLB bingo board. It's the second straight game with double-digit strikeouts for Singer. He also had 12 against the Rays, I believe. Exclusively sinker slider. That's basically all he threw. He had 20 called strikes on the sinker, 10 whiffs on the slider. The velocity was actually also up like about a tick for Singer, which is kind of interesting. He only allowed 2 hard hit balls, which is impressive considering he's below league average in hard contact percent. So he just showed up at Yankee Stadium and it worked out. I don't know if this means that Singer is potentially good. But he's had 3 really good games, and they've been against good opponents. So
yeah, I like his potential. I think he woke up and chose violence against the Yankees.
Yeah, maybe he was pissed off that Benintendi got traded. So
yeah, hey, he doesn't want to pitch against his teammate.
Right. So yeah, it worked out at least for Singer today.
Yep.
And then Zach Wheeler of the Phillies went 7 innings, 3 hits, 2 earned runs, 3 walks, and 8 strikeouts against the Pirates. It was a little bit of a careful Icarus here because Wheeler was dealing through 6 innings, and then he gave up a 2-run homer in the 7th. He went super fastball heavy this start. He threw nearly 60% four-seamers, and on the season, he's been averaging around 40%.
Sheesh.
So, yeah, interesting start from Wheeler. He wasn't getting the whiffs tonight on his secondaries, but he was getting called strikes on the fastball, around 23%, which is a little bit above what his year averages. It's around 20% called strikes. So he was getting more called strikes on the fastball for sure. Again, I said he was cruising through 6 innings, and then he issued a 4-pitch walk, then a 2-run homer. But at the end of the day, it's still a decent start. You know, it's not what you expect from Wheeler, who's, you know, easily a top 10 pitcher, if not a top 5 pitcher. But, you know, you'll take it. It's unfortunate that he had that blow up in the 7th inning. Otherwise, it was a great 6 inning start for Wheeler.
Yeah, I feel like that always happens when a pitcher goes just one more inning after you know they're probably done, and then they issue a walk. It always results in just destruction. It's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, on Wednesday, I had Logan Webb and John Gray go 6.1 innings, 4 in runs, and it was like, no!
Both in the last inning where they got sent out again, they got destroyed. Yeah. It sucks. Yeah, it's very unfortunate.
Tough for those quality start leads.
I feel like that always happens, too. It sucks.
Yeah. But Wheeler only had 70 pitches through 6 innings, so obviously he was going to go out for the 7th. He was super efficient. Like, you know, as I mentioned, I think he had only given up 2 walks and 2 hits through 6 innings.
Yeah, yeah.
He was very efficient. Only had 21 batters faced through 6, so obviously he's going to go out for the 7th. But yeah, it just unraveled a little bit.
Yeah, I can't blame a manager for putting in Wheeler for another inning when he's at 70 pitches after 6. I mean, that makes sense. But when you put out like John Gray, where he has 92 pitches after 6 and then goes out for the 7th, you're like, really? Do you need to do that? I don't know. I think you got other options. But now we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be joined by Jake Crumpler to talk about reliever strategy in fantasy baseball. Stay tuned. All right, we're back and joined by pitcherless writer Jake Crumpler to talk about relievers in fantasy baseball. Jake, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. I'm pumped to join your guys' podcast. You guys do great work every week.
It's our pleasure to have you. But since it's your first time on the show, please let the people know what you do at Pitcherlist, what team you write for, what podcast you're a part of, because you are on a podcast on the Pitcherlist Podcast Network, and what your favorite baseball team is.
Well, I'm a writer for the reliever team. I do the reliever ranks twice a week now, so you'll see me most often if you're following the reliever ranks every day. I, like you said, I'm part of the In the Pen podcast. I'm the interim host right now with Callum out, but don't know how long that'll last. Right now, it's going great talking with Rick Graham every week. He's really a good bullpen expert. And I write for a couple other websites as well, theathleteshub.org and baseballhq. I do playing time analysis there. But my favorite team has got to be, there's 2 of them. I live in the Bay Area. I'm a Giants and an A's fan. I know. Give me the booze. But like, yeah. I have 1 favorite AL team and 1 favorite NL team. They just happen to be right next to each other. I don't really consider them rivals. They haven't faced each other in the World Series since before I was born. And even still, there was like a natural disaster that sort of made the series like to put. So like, Giants and A's fan.
not for nothing, the A's don't really even count as a team, right? Like, we kind of wrote them off now, so it doesn't really matter. You can root for both. We're not mad at you. But in general, we don't get to talk much about relievers on the show, so we're excited to have you and get you to answer some questions about the pen.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about relievers, and Jake, I'll be completely honest. You're one of my favorite reliever writers, because when I edit your articles, there's like nothing I need to change. So thank you for being impeccable about that.
You're welcome. I spend a lot of time reading through it after I write it, so I'm doing my best to put in little work for you guys.
Yeah, they're great. If you're not checking out the reliever ranks articles, you definitely should, at least just to set up your lineups for your reliever, so you don't have you're not starting a guy who, you know, pitched 3 days in a row. It's definitely not going to pitch this day if you're in a daily league. But yeah, so kind of going on to relievers and kind of having a more fantasy bent on them, what do you think most fantasy managers get wrong in regards to relievers on their teams?
There's lots of things to consider when you're talking about relievers. And from what I can tell from like the other guys in my leagues, from analyzing how they pick up relievers and who they decide to go with, it seems like a lot of people like to go with roles over skills, which is something that's talked about a lot in the offseason. You want to draft skills over role because bullpens likely usually figure themselves out. A guy who enters the season with the closer role is not the guy who's going to have it throughout the whole season, especially if there's a guy in the bullpen that is much better. It's also, there's the caveat of small sample sizes where relievers are pitching in such short stints and they're pitching for such short amount of time throughout the season that you can sort of be fooled by small sample sizes. So you don't really want to look at how a player performs in the past because that doesn't guarantee their future success. So somebody like, Corey Knebel, who's been good in the past and in even the like past seasons, but like he was good to start the season, but he ended up losing the closer role, which literally took him from a guy who would have been rostered in pretty much every fantasy league to a guy that's on pretty much everybody's waiver wires because he's not worth it to hold now. So not only are roles too heavily weighed, but also small sample sizes are sort of not considered well enough. And also hot streaks are a thing when you're talking about relievers, which normally is something you only think about when you think about batters. They get hot, they're seeing pitches well, they're able to hit things that they wouldn't normally get to. But the same thing can be said for pitchers, especially relief pitchers. If you look at how they do over a certain number of weeks, some guys will strike out multiple batters in 10 games in a row or something, and then go 10 games in a row with 5 strikeouts total or something.
Yep,
so
right.
It's important to look at pitchers, at relief pitchers specifically, on a weekly basis, on a per game basis, because things can change really drastically over just like every single month. So you want to ride the hot hands. You want to get guys who have better skills than the role and who aren't relying on small sample sizes.
Yeah, I think a lot of people prioritize the role over the actual skill of the pitcher, because I guess it is more important in like a saves only league, for instance, to have a guy who is the closer rather than someone who you don't know is the closer, like a Jason Adams, so to speak. So it is tough, but you want to prioritize the better pitcher, right? It's just the way to go.
Yeah, that'll always turn out with the best results for you, because even if the guy's not getting you saves, he will improve your ratios. People always talk about in so many other podcasts, on so many articles, that if you don't have a pitcher to stream during a week, just go pick up a middle reliever, because they will provide better ratios than a back of the rotation starter that has some tough matchups. So it's always good to go with the guy who's got the better skills, because not only will he give you better ratios, but he'll also rack up the strikeouts, limit the whip, maybe even secure a win or a vulture a save.
Right.
Absolutely.
I think it's always interesting looking at matchups too for relievers, because I mean, it's not often that, you know, people think about streaming relievers. And, you know, on this show, we specifically talk about streaming starters, you know, a segment that we always do. But it is kind of an interesting thing where you talk about, yeah, sometimes it's better to pick up that middle relief guy than the number five guy who has a cushy matchup but just hasn't delivered over the past, you know, 3-4 starts.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. But we've seen a lot of change in how relievers are used in real baseball, with the 3-batter minimum and teams being more willing to put their best relievers into high leverage situations versus having them close games. How does this impact which relievers we pick up and draft for our teams?
I think as a general rule, roles become more important, but that doesn't mean they should be, like we just said with the last question. But roles have become increasingly more important because people are always trying to decipher who is the high leverage reliever, who is the closer in each situation. Like you mentioned, Jason Adam, that it's very – everybody's always speculating on the Rays bullpen because it's so hard to tell which guy is the favorable reliever to use in terms of fantasy, because it's, you know, that they're not going to use that their best reliever in the closer role. They might just use them as the high leverage reliever or switch it around. So you never know. But when it comes to the three batter minimum and stuff, you want guys that don't have platoon splits, guys that don't have a disparity between their stats versus right-handers and versus left-handers, because those players are much more valuable. They're not only able to take on any set of three batters in each inning, but they also will perform well even if they are set up against the side of batters that they don't do as well against. It's also made multi-inning relievers more productive. They've become incredibly productive. Guys like Garrett Whitlock have become some of the best relievers in baseball when they're tossing multiple innings. And especially in leagues where you've got games started limited, then those relievers just become so valuable. That's my home league, where I'm always looking for guys that can go multiple innings because they don't use up a start and they can get a lot of points. They can secure even greater effects on your ratios because they have a higher volume. So those guys can be really good, especially with the way that relievers are used now. You're not really sure you're going to get a save. So get a guy that can go multiple innings, who can possibly close out a three inning save, which is very rare, or secure a win in the middle of the game. But also, the best reliever in team on the team is not necessarily always the best reliever in terms of fantasy, which, you know, has to do with role and stuff. But like we've seen in Minnesota, they don't like to use Yoan Duran as the primary closer, and they sort of like to limit him because he's a rookie. He's a young arm. They've tried to use Emilio Pagan as the closer. He's been taken out of there. They've sort of switched off week to week using those guys in that role, and now they still seem sort of scared to use Yoan Duran exclusively in that role, even though he is clearly the best reliever in that bullpen. So yeah, there's so many things to consider, especially with the way that usage has turned out so far in the modern bullpen. But yeah, you still want guys who go multiple innings. You want guys that don't have the platoon splits, but also, you know, roles are going to be more highly valued by your league mates, and the best relievers on every team are not necessarily the best ones for your fantasy team.
Yeah, my big thing is, ever since my home league switched to save plus hold, which is the first time I've actually ever done save plus hold, usually I'm in traditional leagues or NFBC standard leagues, so I rarely ever get to see saves plus holds, and that format really makes it so that you can grab the best reliever. It doesn't matter what their role is, you want the best reliever on the team. So I like that for that regard. It's obviously a lot harder to win the category because you can roster a bunch of these guys and you can win that, but it is such an interesting thing to chase the best reliever in the bullpen over just chasing the guy who has the job in the ninth inning.
Yeah, I was like thinking of kind of examples of this, and I remember early in the season with the Royals. Now, obviously, kind of with how baseball has turned out, the Royals haven't been that good of a baseball team.
Yeah,
but you know, they had that, you know, kind of mini controversy of like, oh, are the Royals going to close with Josh Stomount or are they going to close with Scott Barlow? And, you know, for a long time, they were putting Barlow actually in their high leverage situations in the seventh or the eighth inning. And yep, a lot of people were just kind of annoyed about that. But now Barlow is just, you know, firmly entrenched as the closer there, because at the end of the day, he is the better of the two. And, you know, you might have chased Stomount at the beginning of the season because you thought that he was going to get more of those, you know, ninth inning appearances. But at the end of the day, you know, as you've kind of mentioned, skills won out, and Barlow is now kind of the closer for that team, even if he's not getting as many save opportunities as we would like.
Yeah, because the Royals are so bad. Yeah.
Horrible. But, horrible.
Yeah, I was speculating on Stomount early on in the season. I thought his skills were comparable to Barlow, but yeah, I mean, when you have a manager like Mike Matheny, who is more of an old school guy, he's going to end up using the best reliever in the closer's role.
And you touched on it too. The Rays are just the most frustrating bullpen in all of baseball. Oh, Andrew Kittredge is a closer. Nope. Jason Add's a closer. Nope. Colin Pache is a closer. Nope. It's just, you never know with those guys.
Yeah. That's a frustrating team.
Definitely.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about maybe some sleeper relievers. And I think maybe let's focus this on, like, if you're in a saves league rather than a saves hold, because just, you know, there's so many options in the save holds league of who's like a sleeper pick.
Yep.
But who are some relievers that you think, you know, are, you know, somewhat widely available in fantasy leagues right now that you think could be a major contributor in the second half of the season for fantasy in saves leagues?
Well, I always come to my podcast fully prepared, so you can bet that I came with a list of like 25 names.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
Nice to consider. Yeah, I mean, I was just scrolling through the roster percentages on ESPN and Yahoo. Mm-hmm. I think Yahoo is probably a better bet for this exercise because the managers on that website are either more active or smarter.
Yeah, I agree completely. For some reason, I think Yahoo is the most played on format because just the roster rates always seem right. And
yeah, it's like ESPN, the guys rostered in less than 50% of leagues are not anywhere close to being that on Yahoo,
right?
Where it's like I'll have guys listed as less than 50% in Yahoo, and those guys are less than 25% in like it's the other way around.
Yep, 100%.
It's so insane. So I've got some names. Obviously, if you're an ESPN, guys in less than 50% of the leagues are going to be not available in most of the leagues for people that are listening. But Garrett Whitlock, Paul Sewald, Devin Williams are all guys that are worth it. Devin Williams, even though he's not the main closer there, he is so good. And just his ratios and his strikeout ability are going to help your team. While Whitlock, like I mentioned, goes multiple innings and looks like he could steal the closer role from Tanner Houck right now. And obviously, Paul Sewald has been really good for the whole season.
If Josh Hader gets traded, which it's always been a rumor every year, I feel like it's like, oh, Josh Hader might get moved. If Josh Hader gets moved, Devin Williams immediately becomes like a top 10 closer in baseball.
Yeah, he might be. Yeah, he is one of the best relief pitchers in baseball. I'm pretty sure he's got the most saves plus holds anyway, even though you said we're mostly focusing on saves leagues. But yeah, he's been so amazing this year. That airbender is something else.
Yep.
In Yahoo leagues, however, left less than 50% rostered, guys like Tanner Scott, Lou Trevino, Jason Adam, and John Schreiber are available. John Schreiber is one of those guys where he's got really good ratios, but he could also swoop a couple saves, especially with Whitlock and Houck not being the traditional closers, guys that, you know, can still go multiple innings. But Tanner Scott, I think people are still sort of wary of him. He sort of walks too many guys. and the Marlins have really struggled to maintain a closer throughout the season. But yeah, he's getting saves, and I mean, that's going to get you points in your standings in roto leagues. So it's always worth it to go for a guy that's got the role right now, but he could also be traded. I think Trevino is an interesting one. He is available in so many leagues because his stats are so bad. This may surprise you, but I said like 2 months ago, maybe it was more like a month and a half ago, that he was someone to watch as a dark horse closer candidate back when he had like a 9 ERA and Danny Jimenez was there. And so I ended up seeming pretty smart when he did end up taking the closer role, but it all had to do with him having previous experience in that role. And while he hasn't been super incredible so far this season, even since then, he's got better skills than he's ever shown before, especially last season when he was the closer all year. So I think his second half is going to be a lot better than his first. And Jason Adam also, we mentioned before, it's a coin toss whether or not he'll be the closer from day to day. But he's got pretty good skills, and he's been racking up saves, and he's the best right-handed reliever in that Tampa Bay bullpen.
Yeah, it kind of blows my mind that Paul Sewald is not rostered more. Like, granted, he was kind of a setup man for, you know, the first probably couple months of the season, but he's like firmly in that closer role now for the Mariners. And the Mariners look good. Like, they look like a team that's going to compete up till the end of the season, and there's just going to be a lot of opportunities for him to close out games. I'm curious kind of, because you mentioned a couple interesting names, right? Lou Trevino, Tanner Scott, like guys that aren't on outstanding teams, you know. Do you feel like it makes sense to go after those closers on teams where the opportunities for saves are going to be fewer than, you know, someone who's like on the Yankees or something like that, obviously?
Well, if you're deciding between a guy who's on the Yankees that's not really in the conversation for saves, like, let's say Aroldis Chapman is on your wire, and we all know that Clay Holmes is the locked-in closer there, I would still rather have a guy on these other teams because they have a much greater chance of getting saves, even though the Yankees in this example would be getting more wins. I think the guy who is the locked-in closer has a higher threshold of racking up saves, but also, like, if they're terrible, then you definitely don't want to go with somebody like that. Right. I had Tanner Rainey on my home team the whole year he went down with an elbow injury. And I had been telling people to sell him as soon as you could, because not only were the Nationals not getting him enough save opportunities, but he wasn't blowing anybody's socks off, which sort of set him back. You know, he's not improving your ratios enough. He's not striking out enough batters. And even when he does get save opportunities, he's blowing them and he doesn't have many chances anyway. So he wasn't really a guy that I felt super confident in. And the fact that he was getting saves sort of manufactured a trade value for him that you could have capitalized on before he got injured. So maybe some people listen to that if they were reading my reliever ranks, but I doubt it.
Yeah. I guess maybe just another question. How do you feel about his replacement, Kyle Finnegan?
Not good. he's not that amazing. Obviously he would have had the role before Rainey got injured if he was any good. So he is the best strikeout arm in that bullpen, but that bullpen is not great. And that's why this is literally like, it's the same thing as Rainey, except with a worse reliever. And now the team is even worse. It's going to be trading away more guys. Finnegan could be on the move, but even if he's not on the move, he's going to have even less reinforcements in that bullpen. Like Carl Edwards Jr. could be on the move. So yeah, I mean, obviously if you're like in a 15 teamer, you sort of need to go pick him up, because if he's getting saves in 15 teamers, it's really hard to find anybody that's even remotely like getting a save once a month or something. So that, I mean, that's a guy that's going to be really valuable. But if you're in a 12 teamer, a 10 teamer, I just don't think it's worth it. Like, as long as he's hot, like if he's on a streak, like I was talking about, if he's on a streak of locking down saves, that could be good. But there's so many other options. I would much rather have a guy that's going to get fewer saves, but produce better ratios, because Finnegan's just not going to have many opportunities, just like the same for Rainey, and he's going to blow a lot of the ones that he gets.
Yeah, Finnegan is one of those roles over skills guys.
Yeah.
That's one of those guys. But we've talked a lot about relievers and how we go about picking them up and drafting them and using them correctly, but what is your personal strategy, Jake, when it comes to relievers in the draft and then in season? And does it vary between saves and saves plus hold leagues? Besides the obvious caveat that the player pool is much wider in a save plus hold league, like, how do you approach the whole bullpen thing initially in the draft and then within the season?
Well, in the draft, it's you don't want to go for guys that don't have good skills. Like I said, you want to draft skills over roles. You want to get the guys early on. I like drafting guys in the top 100. I like drafting guys right after, like inside the pick, inside the top 125, because those guys have set roles and they're actually good. So if you were in on Liam Hendricks and Josh Hader and Ryan Pressly this year, you're probably feeling pretty good about yourself, even though they haven't been as good as you might have expected. They've still been really amazing and they have no risk of losing their jobs. But then once you get into that middle tier of guys who don't have the skills to hold on to a role like you would expect, like I mentioned before, Corey Knebel was in that tier where he was a guy that people were speculating on. Like they said, he was going to be the closer when they signed him, and he had been really good in the past for the Brewers and was pretty solid in his return with the Dodgers. But you know, his skills just weren't that amazing, and the Phillies have other choices there as well. And if you had spent your draft pick on him, you probably missed out on a lot of better batters or starters around that range. So I think it's a lot smarter to go for the top tier guys and then just hold off until the end where you can speculate on some guys. I know in my home league, I only got Ryan Pressly. I wanted more from the top tier, but other guys in my league were just going so hard on the relievers, and I didn't get any other ones. Like, I'm pretty sure the second closer, I'm doing air quotes over here by myself, what my second closer drafted was like Will Smith. He was not a closer. Yeah, exactly. But I did end up with Ryan Helsley. I had Tanner Rainey. I had Brett Martin for a short time, and now I've got Garrett Whitlock on my team. Guys will appear on the wire. You will be able to snatch guys off the wire, especially early on in the season. And now that we're at the trade deadline time, there's going to be even more guys that will pop up that earn save chances, like we just talked about Kyle Finnegan, but even other guys like whoever's going to take over for David Robertson when he's traded. But guys will pop up through the season. As long as you are confident in your ability to stay on top of that stuff, you should just, you know, lay off the closers, get a couple top ones, and then be confident in your ability to grab guys later on in the season. But Yeah, I mean, during the season, what I'm looking at is monitoring usage. Obviously, you want to see where a guy's being used in the game. Is he the high leverage reliever? Is he sort of pitching the sixth inning, or is he the guy who's setting up for the closer? Does he have a chance to be the next guy up if the closer falters? And also, you want to keep an eye on struggling closers, guys that aren't doing too well, because that's sort of a bullpen where you'll be able to find somebody who could take over the role. And then also, on more of like a minute scale, keeping track of pitch mix changes, guys who are on hot streaks. I literally will just go into the player pool and sort by strikeouts, and then just look at the guys with the fewest walks on the top of the strikeout leaderboard. So because strikeout to walk rate is one of the most rudimentary stats, but it's also one of the most predictive for future performance. And so if you're trying not to rely on past performance, you look at a guy who's striking out a lot of batters and not walking a lot of batters. Not only is he going to keep your whip low, but he's also going to improve your strikeout numbers, and also is going to have a good ERA most likely through the end of the season. And in save holds leagues, that's where I'm using that strategy to try to uncover hidden gems. You know, Eli Morgan is one of those guys who was super unknown and probably still in that same category, where he just doesn't walk anybody and he gets a lot of strikeouts. And when I was looking early on in the season, that was a guy where I was like, oh wow, that's an impressive strikeout to walk ratio. I'm going to throw him on my team and see how it goes. He obviously is not going to take saves away from Emmanuel Clase, but he moved up really quickly in that bullpen on the depth chart, and now is the number two guy there and is getting the majority of the holds in that bullpen. So in saves hold leagues, just like looking for the guy with the best skills, that's where it works out most, because role doesn't really matter too much in those type of leagues, because a lot of guys can get holds. Obviously the setup guy for the closer is going to get the most holds, but there's always two or three guys besides the closer that are going to be racking up stats in that category. So you really just want to go for the guy that's going to also improve your ratios, because holds and saves are so hard to come by that they will naturally come to you if you have the best relievers on each team.
Yeah, I have the same approach to you in drafts when it comes to relievers. I like to get one guy that I guarantee know has the role. Like, I came out of my home league draft with Kenley Jansen. I came out of another league with, I believe, Josh Hader. One league, Ryan Pressly. Like, I try to leave the draft with at least one guy that I know is guaranteed to have a role. And then I know that I'm so active within the season that I'm going to find some of those later guys, like a Ryan Helsley or a David Robertson who wasn't drafted at all. And those kind of guys will come eventually. They might even come week one of your fantasy season. So I really don't stress about it later on in the draft. I'll just walk away with one solid closer and then figure it out as I go. Because as long as you're active, you will come on top of it.
I think relievers are interesting for me because I tend to punt a lot on relievers. Mm-hmm. Unless like the value is there. Like in one of my leagues, it was a dynasty startup. But we did basically an auction draft for, you know, the regular season. And for some reason, people were just really undervaluing, like, the top guys. It was a save plus hold league, so I kind of understand why they did that. But I remember, like, I got Edwin Diaz for really cheap. I got Chapman for really cheap. I mean, that didn't really work out super well, but, you know, it happened. You know, was able to trade for Craig Kimbrough really cheaply because no one really believed in it. And so sometimes I just kind of take advantage of market inefficiencies. That's what I enjoy doing. But I will say, like, in the kind of the conversation on skills versus roles in the Peel staff league, which Jake and I actually are in the same staff league here, I had a really interesting, and like what I ended up with my relievers, I think I ended up getting Devin Williams, Scott Barlow, and Johan Duran. And like, none of those guys were really getting saves. I mean, Devin Williams and Johan Duran are definitely not getting saves consistently, but the ratios I get from those guys are just so nice that it's like, I don't need to like pursue other relievers right now. Cause like, yeah, it probably means I end up losing saves every single week. Cause it's a head to head category. It's league, but my ERA and WHIP end up being so much better than the guys that I'm facing.
Yeah. I've been consistently rostering like four or five relievers in that league every week, even though that's like a majority of my pitching roster. They, like you said, they're just going to improve your week all the time. And if you've got guys that are sort of integral parts of the bullpen, they will pitch all the time. And so they will have an impact, especially in a weekly league. I feel like that's super nice. But if you're in deep leagues, like I said, 15 teamers, you will benefit from having middle relievers, guys who aren't getting saves, because they will improve your ratios, they will rack up the strikeouts, and they won't hurt you as bad. Although, like, when they do blow up, you can have like a 4-run blow up and then they only get one out or something, and that's really going to hurt your ERA. But as long as you've got a good one, it's not going to hurt you that often.
Without a doubt. I definitely think that. Well, it's been fantastic to talk about relievers with you, Jake. Thank you so much for stopping by and being a guest here on the show. Good luck with your podcast. And is there anything that you would like to plug before you go? Your Twitter, your podcast, whatever you want.
Yeah, well, yeah, thanks for having me on. You guys do great work out here. I'm pumped to listen to this back and listen to all your other podcasts in the future. But the listeners can follow me at Jake Crumpler on Twitter. Go read my reliever ranks every week, twice a week. Listen to the In the Pen podcast. We just tried to uncover the next Clay Holmes on our most recent one, and we'll be covering all of the trade deadline moves with our next one coming out next week. You can read a lot of my work at theathleteshub.org. I do a weekly fantasy recap article there. And also, if you feel inclined, then you can go and subscribe to Baseball HQ and read my playing time analysis for the Giants, A's, and Diamondbacks. And if you really love me so much, you can go find all of my work on crumplerbaseball.com. It's just, I've got everything in one place there. So if you're only interested in reading my work, you can find all of my articles, all of my podcasts. It's all going to be linked there. This podcast will be linked there as well. So just, I've got a lot of stuff. I'm always working on a ton of different things. I'm grinding, as the kids say.
Well, we love someone that always is on their grind. And remember, everybody, that's at Jake Crumpler on Twitter. That's JakeCrumpler. Make sure you go and follow him and check out all of his very several plugs. Go and check out the podcast and the pen and all of that other stuff. But once again, thank you so much for joining us. And now we move on to streamers for this weekend. John, what is on the docket for these next few days?
Yeah, we got an interesting slate of streamers here. Starting on Saturday, Jacob Junis of the Giants. He's currently 26% roster in Yahoo, 16% roster on ESPN. He goes against the Cubs. A lot of rumors around the Cubs. Who are they going to sell? You know, Wilson Contreras, Ian Happ, who knows? They have much less pieces to sell than last year when they literally just cleared out that World Series team.
Yep.
Junis is an intriguing arm. There is occasional flashes of brilliance. He went six innings with one run, 8 strikeouts against Miami a couple starts ago. There's a possibility that he could, you know, do the same thing against the Cubs. He's not a prolific strikeout guy. He's kind of hovering around that like 9K per 9 value, a little bit less than that. He doesn't always go 6 either. But hey, that's why he's available to stream. Junis has some interesting stuff, and against the Cubs, I think there's some potential there. Aaron Ashby of the Brewers, we already talked about him. He's currently 28% rostered in Yahoo, 12% rostered on ESPN. He goes against the Red Sox, and as we've discussed, the Red Sox do not look good. And Nick actually broke down every pitch that Ashby threw in his start on Monday against the Rockies. So if you're just interested in seeing, is his stuff working, go watch that video. He's been incredibly consistent for the Brewers over the past month. And yeah, this Boston team just looks in shambles. I can't imagine morale's very good. Look for Ashby to provide a pretty decent return in this start. And then finally, Brad Keller of the Royals, 14% rostered in Yahoo, 10% rostered on ESPN. He's going against the White Sox on Monday. I'll be honest, I'm kind of just picking Keller because we need a guy to stream. If you want some hope, in his last two starts against the White Sox this year, he's pitched 7 innings in both of those games. He only struck out 3 batters in both of those games. But he did manage to keep the White Sox from scoring more than 3 times, and that's a quality start for Brad Keller. 2 of them. Do I believe that this will have any influence on his start on Monday? Nope. But it's certainly an option you could take. Tony La Russa just, you know, wants to manage this White Sox team very poorly, and you could maybe take advantage of that with a Brad Keller start.
Definitely. I don't have to give any backing to Aaron Ashby because I roster him in multiple 10-team leagues, in 12-team leagues, in 15-team leagues, so...
Yeah.
Ashby, as a streamer, is wild because I just feel like he should be rostered. But yeah, absolutely. With his roster rates, he's a streamer. And I would definitely recommend picking up Ashby. Sure, he could give you a stinker, but I feel most confident about him. And Jacob Junis and Brad Keller have just been serviceable and solid for the entire year, really. So why not take a stab on them if you need a streamer?
Yep.
But that wraps up everything for today's show. If you haven't already, make sure you follow the show on Twitter at ThisWeekPL. And also, you could send us your comments, questions, and concerns to our email, thisweekplpod@gmail.com. If you'd like to talk to John or I directly, you can follow John on Twitter at TheJohnKe, which is T-H-E-J-O-H-N-K-E. And you can follow myself on Twitter at Regicidal, that's R-E-G-I-C-I-D-A-L. Also, make sure that you subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform that you listen to your podcast on, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever else, we are on all of them. And make sure that you leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. It allows people to know that this show is worth listening to and that people are frequently listening to it. So make sure you leave a 5-star review. We would greatly appreciate it. And lastly, sign up for Pitcher List Plus. By doing so, you could join us in the Pitcher List Discord and get advice from all of the fantasy experts and writers over there. But that's all for this week. We'll be back next week recapping another week in fantasy baseball. For John, I am Lee, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.